Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I am James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Stu. How are we doing, buddy?
Well, I'm just doing super well, James. Thank you for asking. It is a couple days after we usually record. We usually record on Saturdays. You know, Mother's Day, we all have mothers and they all want attention, so we had some things to do over the weekend. But it's Tuesday, middle of the week. We're ready to talk some football. We actually have some news to talk about. And most importantly and most fun, weekdays are for hard liquor. So Dr. Stu has already started on some rum and coke and, you know, looking forward to some good discussion with a little bit of that social filter removed. But how are you doing this lovely Tuesday, James?
I'm doing really well. Shout out to the moms, by the way. Shout out to my mom, your mom, everybody's mom. Mm-hmm. Happy late Mother's Day. I did not get the liquor memo, so I got a big thing of water next to me and obviously the beer for the end.
Mm-hmm. What a square, am I right, but everyone?
But if we want to, like, cut this and come back in an hour, I can take, like, 20 shots of Malort.
Please don't do that. No, I don't want to plan a funeral. Kelsey would be beside herself. I can't face Kelsey having you die during a Fantasy Footbeer recording.
Well, it wouldn't be your fault. It'd be the Malort's fault. But anyway, we got a good show planned for you all today. Today, we're going to talk about a couple pieces of news, and then we're going to get into some spicy debates. I'll talk about a little bit more of that later, but let's start off with probably the biggest piece of news over the last week, and that is George Pickens, wide receiver from the Pittsburgh Steelers, traded to the Dallas Cowboys. Stu, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, so he went over to the Cowboys for honestly less than what I would have expected. So Dallas was sending a 2026 third-round pick and a 2027 fifth-round pick to the Steelers, and also getting back the 2027 sixth-round pick from the Steelers in addition to Pickens. That seems kind of a soft return to me for someone who's been touted as this, you know, possible wide receiver one talent. It really makes me believe that he's a bit more of a hothead, a, you know, locker room problem than many people would like to admit. But so going to the Cowboys, I do kind of like the Cowboys offense overall. I don't love their running back situation, but Dak Prescott is perennially pretty good. CeeDee Lamb is absolutely a locked in wide receiver one, first round target in 2025 drafts, and now Pickens gets to slot in, you know, just behind him as the wide receiver 1A, if you want to call it. But it just kind of remains to be seen for me if he could gel with that role, if he could vibe with that role. So I have a couple of doubts myself, but I want to hear your reaction, you know, your gut reaction to this as well, James.
You know, my gut reaction is thinking about why would Mike Tomlin want to deal him for so little? And I think that the price kind of suggests how Tomlin and the Steelers organization views him, because yes, he's obviously extremely talented. We've seen a lot of that, but we've also seen him crash out. It's now a big meme of whoever the Steelers revolving door of quarterbacks spits out this year makes a check down pass to whoever is even the running back there this year. And meanwhile, George Pickens is 50 yards downfield fighting a freaking mascot. So him going to Dallas, brighter lights, probably more primetime games, probably a little bit more pressure, still no quarterback. But, I mean, after saying that, it sounds hypocritical for me to say that I do like it for Dallas. Getting a legit number two option under CeeDee Lamb, I think lifts both those guys, as well as, you know, if Dak is healthy for this year, which I believe he will be, it should help him too, and in turn help the entire Cowboys organization. But that's all contingent on Pickens being able to actually be locked into what's happening during a game and not crashing out. Mm-hmm. So,
and the other thing that we have to consider is, you know, the team that he's leaving, because I don't know if I can really pin down exactly what the organizational goal is for the Steelers. I mean, they traded for DK Metcalf, and that sounded like a good pairing. You know, DK and Pickens, both kind of hotheads, but if they're both, you know, running well, then that could be a great sort of offense along with Jalen Warren. But now it's DK, the man on the island, and their quarterback situation is still less than set in stone. Right now we're looking at Mason Rudolph, Will Howard, and Skylar Thompson. We've had rumors abound about Aaron Rodgers going to the Steelers, but now there may be more suitors for Aaron Rodgers, according to the next bit of news that we talk about. But it really just makes me think that the Steelers are just washing this season. They're trying to build for the future and to get a franchise quarterback to build with. And now I just don't want any part of this offense. DK Metcalf is not somebody, in my opinion, that is going to be super fantasy relevant, even if he is the only person in the offense besides Freiermuth and Warren getting checkdowns to be targeted. It's just, he's going to get blanketed, and I don't believe he has the skill set to power past these people or power through these people. And especially, I think it's going to do a number on his mental health and his mental game. He's also one that can throw punches or grab people and lift them because he's huge. It's nasty. It's a nasty situation in Pittsburgh, and I'm not really one that's buying into it.
Yeah, and even if Aaron Rodgers does end up being the guy there in Pittsburgh,
and it's still bad. It's bad.
Like, what have we seen from Aaron Rodgers over the last couple of years to suggest that he can elevate DK Metcalf to what he probably should be?
Nothing.
But with that being said, let's get to our second piece of news, which, as you said, might have something to do with Aaron Rodgers, and that is the retirement of Derek Carr. So Derek Carr had a season-ending injury last year, and the Saints organization has brought in a new quarterback. So the writing on the wall was kind of there for Derek Carr. He hasn't been an elite quarterback at any point in his career. And I think for him, it's, you know, a solid life decision to not be chasing mediocrity while also battling injuries. I mean, Stu, you and I have both had pretty bad injuries in the past, and it's not fun to deal with. And so being able to just sit back and say, I'm a millionaire, I made a lot of money playing football, and now I don't play football, but I'm still a millionaire, that's fine. But now the Saints have Tyler Shough.
Yeah, they sure do have show, don't they?
Yeah.
Not much else besides him. You know, Spencer Rattler got a start or two last season and fundamentally unimpressed. There's a guy named Jake Haener, who I think that's how you pronounce that. Excuse me, I've never met Jake in real life. But those are the three guys we're looking at, unless Aaron Rodgers is brought in or something else happens in New Orleans. But to something you said, I do give Derek Carr a lot of credit. It's an important, you know, milestone in anyone's life, and it's difficult to be that, you know, introspective and that self-aware and say, you know what, this just isn't worth it anymore. This isn't for me. This isn't what I want for my life. I'd rather go on to the next chapter. And I think I saw he's giving up money to do this. I mean, some $37 million or something left on his contract with New Orleans. And to give that up when you could just be rehabbing an injury and get paid those fat stacks of cash, you know, good on him. I do really applaud him for knowing exactly what he wants in his life. So, you know, fantasy aside, good for him.
Yeah, for sure.
But now, New Orleans looks gross.
There has been a lot of tanking for hometown kid Arch Manning talk. And there will certainly be in a good situation to do it, provided Arch Manning doesn't stay in college for another year, which has been suggested that it may happen. But that's for later next year, talking about college foosball.
Mm-hmm. And they do possibly have a really good saying, the march for arch. You know, the Saints go marching in. That it's almost like the Mavericks getting Cooper Flagg first overall in the lottery. That it just works as a storyline, you know.
Uh-huh. It's definitely not, you know, it's not rigged.
Not rigged at all. No. Not a billion-dollar industry.
What 1.8% chance of it happening? It just so happens to go to the team that just pissed away their superstar to the NBA's biggest franchise. Definitely not rigged at all.
No, Nico Harrison foresaw this. He's GM of the year for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, at least in football, we know that there's a script out there. You couldn't script this.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Anyway, we've got our next segment ready to dive into here on Fantasy Footbeer. And Stu and I are going to talk about some debates and controversies in fantasy football at large. We got a few that have come up over the last couple years. And these are some major question marks around how they should be handled by a fantasy league, a fantasy commissioner. And there's really not a single consensus on a lot of these. There are general ways people think they should go, but we're going to weigh in with our own two cents and see how we feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first of those is a new controversy. And a new player, a new type of player we haven't seen before, and that is Travis Hunter, newly drafted by the Jags. And with him being drafted, it brings up the problem of, should he be scored as an offensive player for his defensive plays, even if your league does not have IDPs, individual defensive players. So, Stu, what's your take on that?
Yeah, so I may or may not have gotten into a semi-heated argument on Discord a couple weeks ago with a friend, you know, talking about exactly how we would handle this situation. You know, does it matter what he does or doesn't do on either side of the ball? I do have one thing just to echo Bryce, James. You did say that we've never seen this before. This is not, quote, unprecedented, as I claimed that Travis Hunter is. Deion Sanders played two-way back in the 90s. Do I agree with that sentiment? No. But it's a sentiment that can be made. So that's the first kind of debate. Is this an unprecedented thing that's happening to fantasy football? And how exactly should we tackle it? And, you know, we may agree, we may disagree, but I'm just going to come out and say exactly what I think people should do. And it harkens to the kind of comparison that some people make, that Travis Hunter is a very Shohei Ohtani sort of individual for football, as Shohei is for baseball. And for those of you that only care about football, Shohei Ohtani is a demigod from Asia who came over to Major League Baseball here in America, and he both pitches at an extremely high level and hits and plays defense at an extremely high level. Though he doesn't really play defense anymore for injuries, he's great at both. How does fantasy baseball handle Shohei? And I think we should model how football handles Travis Hunter with how baseball handles Shohei. You can insert him as an offensive player or as a pitcher. So, you know, there's a lot of lineup shuffling depending on what Shohei's doing that evening. But none of his pitching counts if he's in an offensive slot. None of his hitting counts if he's pitching. And I think that's exactly how Travis Hunter should be handled. Maybe you do have individual defensive player slots in your league. Maybe you don't. But if he's in the wide receiver slot, it's his offense that counts. And pretty much that's it. Maybe you want to get crazy and have some fun and say if he has a pick six, that's so rare and unlikely that, you know, maybe just to have fun, you should be credited for that. But you know, that's about as far as I would be willing to go personally. If he's in an offensive slot, only offense. If he's in a defensive slot, only defense. Because this is going to prevent him from just rocketing up IDP draft boards and just completely skewing the market, because he's so valuable to have two players essentially in the same slot. So that's what I think, James. I know maybe you'll have a different opinion, but let's hear it. What do you got for Travis Hunter and how we should deal with him?
Well, that's a really interesting take. I see it a little bit differently. And I think it all is entirely based on how your league scores. So in the past, I see Travis Hunter like a punt returner. So there are a lot of offensive players who return punts. If your offensive player returns a punt for a touchdown, that offensive player, I believe in most leagues across platforms with standard scoring, that touchdown is scored and credited both to the defense and special teams and to the individual player. I think, in my mind, that's the exact same way that it should be credited to Travis Hunter. Now, I might be in the minority here, but I don't think that he's going to get enough two-way action for this to be a common thing. And I'm not even completely sure that he's going to get an... If he does get two-way action, he'll get enough action on the offensive side of the ball to be worth a starting position in fantasy, or even more than a stash. But I mean, this is kind of... I mean, you're comparing him to Shohei. I don't know what to compare him to. I don't know if his inconsistency in playing is going to lead to legitimate startable fantasy production. But if he does play both ways, I think that at least his touchdowns on defense should be credited to him as an individual player. Now, if you do have an IDP league, like Stu said there, I think that's a really cool idea, and I think that's a really good way of handling it. I don't think... Well, I've only played in a couple IDP leagues. It's not something I'm super familiar with, but if that was something I was doing, I would really consider that rule you had there, Stu. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I played in maybe one or two IDP leagues, and nothing, you know, really stood out to me about the format, but it really just boils down to, you know, get your league together, talk it out, you know, see what everybody's opinion is. If you need to hold a vote, democracy rules, good for us, you know, majority rules. But, you know, it's going to be different for every league. Maybe there's going to be some $300, $500 buy-in leagues that are going to be way more strict about this. And then in your family league, you could say, hey, you know what, maybe Uncle Jack wants to take Travis Hunter first overall and get all these points racked up. Good for Uncle Jack. Let's just have fun, you know. But, you know, talk it out, be open and honest with everybody, and you can get past a lot of these controversies just doing that.
Mm-hmm. Especially if there's money involved, you got to talk.
Oh yeah.
About it. You
oh
can't
yeah.
Let a commissioner make that call. You gotta talk with your league. But good first debate, dude.
Okay.
Look at us.
One out of four ish.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to number two. Next up is DeMar Hamlin. I should have given that a little bit of
context.
More intense preface. Uh-huh. Yeah. So this is not a current debate that is happening right now, at least not much anymore. But if you would all join me in a jaunt back in time a couple years ago to what would have been most of your fantasy championship weekend, 2023, correct? 23, 22, 23?
Something like that.
One of those. And we all remember the Bengals versus the Bills and what happened to DeMar Hamlin following a kickoff. Very unfortunate what happened to him. Very awesome that he's back playing today and doing it at a high level. But how it pertained to fantasy football was what for a lot of leagues could have been a league-breaking moment, because the rest of that game was canceled. All of the points that teams were expecting to get from Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon at the time, and Stephon Diggs and everybody else who was on the Bills, those points disappear. And a lot of leagues handled this a lot of different ways. My way, how I would handle it, is not a way that I've seen most people do it. I saw most leagues, if their championship game was impacted by this, which how good all of those players were, a lot of them were, a lot of them either went to the average scores of those players and applied them to that game. Some leagues just decided to call it a draw. I wouldn't do that. From my perspective as a commissioner, what happened in that game in terms of fantasy scoring is part of the randomness and unpredictability of football. That might seem a little bit harsh given the circumstances, but I would have let the points stood where they were. And if that circumstance ruined your game, it ruined your game. I know I'm in the minority of that. Stu, I'm not entirely sure where you sit on that, but what's your take?
So
there?
I'm honestly probably going to echo a lot of the lines of what you're thinking. This is the inherent risk that we take in playing fantasy football. You are essentially making a bet. You're saying these sets of players are going to perform better in this week than your set of players. You know, it's not, in my opinion, a whole lot different than, you know, you play a bunch of Bears players and all of a sudden Soldier Field gets, you know, flooded. If you remember back, was it 2 years ago in week one, they were basically playing in a swamp and the players from both teams essentially did nothing. Everybody just kind of waited for the game to be over. Like, this is the risk that you run, and that it happened late in the season is unfortunate, but my ultimate feeling on this, having not been impacted at all and none of my money or buy-in being impacted at all, is just kind of suck it up. Like, this is the game that we play. This is what life is. You could find randomness like this in your job, in your home life, in the stock market. Your bets may not always pan out, and you just need to deal with that disappointment. And it sucks, but, you know, you hopefully had fun throughout the rest of the regular season before that. I mean, you watched a man literally die on the field. Like, they should not have kept the game going. You need to stop the game. It was perfectly the reason to do that. Like, that was the correct choice, in my opinion. And losing those points, it might make you mad, might lose you some money. You can find different ways to handle it. But ultimately, you need to suck it up and move on with your life, because this is just how the universe exists, honestly. So,
yep.
I may be a little more harsh than you were, or at least in my verbiage I was a little more harsh, but that's kind of along what I was feeling your position was, James.
Yeah, we got to the same place there. And ultimately, with this and with any debates you may have in your fantasy leagues, the number one thing to do is talk to your league mates. I did see instances of this collapsing leagues. I've seen instances of a lot less intense life or death things collapsing leagues. Usually it's just collusion. But
collusion.
Collusion. I almost didn't want to say it. But always talk with your league mates. Always make sure everybody's on the same page, especially if money is involved. And now that we know that this is a thing that can happen, have a plan for it ahead of time. Talk with your league. Have a 5-minute meeting before your draft. Like, hey, if this happens, how do we want to handle it?
Absolutely.
But moving on to our third point of debate today. This isn't as much one that a lot of leagues have a lot of control over, but last year, one of the most interestingly scored plays I've ever seen in an NFL football game led to Josh Allen being credited with 2 touchdowns on a single play. which those of us who are aware of how the passage of time typically works, that is not possible. So, Stu, if you were a commissioner and someone who was playing, say, against Josh Allen in that game came to you and said, "This is bullshit. Why does he get two touchdowns? Please remove those extra points with your special commissioner powers." Mm-hmm. What would you say to that person? How would you approach that debate?
Right. And things like this are why I'm quite glad that I'm not commissioning any, you know, super important or for money leagues or things like that. I don't really want that responsibility on my plate. And I'm happy someone else shoulders that. Cough, cough, James. So before I answer the question, just a little bit of context. If you don't remember the play itself, Josh Allen was rolling left. He throws to Amari Cooper, the wide receiver for the Bills at the time. The Bills are kind of involved in a lot of these debates that we're bringing up. Amari catches it. He laterals as he's about to be tackled and taken down. He laterals to Josh Allen, who then goes and scores. So if you wanted to go by the letter of the law, I mean, I could understand why it was ruled this way. Do I think that it's ultimately BS that it happened and he gets two touchdowns on the same play? Yeah. But removing something like that, I feel, sets a dangerous precedent for a league, for a commissioner, because, you know, commissioners need to be, you know, not less morally upstanding than the average individual. They need to be way more morally upstanding with the average individual, because the option is always there. Maybe they lose by 1 point. They could fudge the numbers a little bit, and maybe somebody notices, maybe they don't. Leagues have collapsed over things like this in the past. But ultimately, I feel you have to go with what is ruled in the game. And despite the fact that we may not always agree with how the official scorekeeper does things, I mean, I am much more of a fan of baseball. I like watching baseball. Talking about hits versus errors, you know, you can disagree with the official rule keeper, the scorekeeper. They're a human being. That's your prerogative as a fellow human being. But for the purposes of fantasy, to keep everything as fair and equitable between, you know, 10, 12, 14 individuals that have no real power in the game, you kind of just have to let some other entity make the decisions for you in that sense. We can't let one of those players, the commissioner, have, you know, authority over that and be able to change what they want to change willy-nilly or on the whims of the manager that was slighted, or for lack of a better word, slighted by this turn of events. So kind of leave it stand. While I don't agree with the rule and the ruling, that's just kind of is what it is, baby. You know, you just got to deal with it.
I fully agree with your take there, which is kind of ruining our debate.
It is.
Portion here. We're not going to disagree a lot, but mm-hmm. I totally agree. As a commissioner here, you got to stand your ground on this. And if you are taking, say it's ESPN or Sleeper or CBS, Yahoo, whatever you're using as your provider, you need to defer to that scoring system as being infallible there, even if it isn't. Is it bullshit that he got, I'll bleep myself there. Is it dumb that he got credited with two touchdowns on a single play? Yes, but it's semantically consistent with how NFL scoring is written. I had to learn about that kind of stuff when I worked for Pro Football Focus and why it is the way it is. And that specifically is dumb. But as a commissioner, you wash your hands of that. You do not cave. Because if you cave to that, then as Stu said, where's the line? So that's going to bring us to our final point of debate here, and we'll try to do this one as quick as we can, and that is kind of an older debate about everyone's favorite guy who we don't know if he's a quarterback or a tight end. And sort of a similar situation to the Travis Hunter thing, but also not, because he plays two offensive positions, and that is Taysom Hill. So, if you recall, Taysom Hill started to become a hot name in fantasy football because he was a quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, who also played tight end. So there was the debate. Should he be forced to go into the quarterback slot and only get quarterback points? Should he be forced into the tight end slot and not be able to get the extra quarterback points? Because that second issue there is significantly more important than the first. If you're a tight end and you are getting points for completed passes, points for throwing touchdowns as well as receiving touchdowns, it's a big deal. It's a big potential boost of points, and it has given him some major hauls of points in the past. But ultimately, it ended up sorting itself out that Taysom Hill wasn't consistent enough of a producer to really make his way into a lot of fantasy lineups on a regular basis. He did have his moments, but the debate became, Where should he play, and how should he be scored? And from my perspective, I would go with the way that it really ended up being with him once he signed his second contract with the Saints and signed as a tight end, who could also occasionally play quarterback. If he plays both positions, I think he should be scored for both positions. If you have a receiver who occasionally throws a touchdown pass like Tyreek Hill on a flea flicker or something, give him the points for throwing the touchdown. He was part of the play. He was part of what happened in the football game, and that's ultimately what fantasy football scoring is. It reflects what happens in the game. Mm-hmm. So if we don't score Taysom Hill for all of the things he does in a football game, then it's kind of like I said before, where do we draw the line? But ultimately this year, it looks like Taysom Hill is injured. What was it? He tore his ACL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Late last season. And hopefully he recovers well. He's an exciting player to watch when he really anything he's doing is kind of fun. I kind of see Riley Leonard, if he ends up getting any playing time with the Colts, he fits that mold. But, Stu, how do you feel about this issue?
Yeah, so it's, you know, on a base level, somewhat similar to the Travis Hunter thing. But for whatever reason in my mind, being both positions on the offensive side of the ball only, I mean, we try to classify these players as best we can, but they can do other things. You brought up Tyreek Hill throwing touchdowns. I'm thinking of all the times Julian Edelman did that. Debo Samuel is a wide receiver slash running back. We don't punish him for that. We don't try to fit him into a specific mold because he does two things. It just so happened that Taysom Hill does two things, and one of them is super valuable, that being the quarterback play. I mean, he does even more than that. He was kind of a running back, too. I think he had a game last year early on in the season. He ran for two or three touchdowns or something on four attempts. Like, he just is the player that can do that sort of thing, and it's so variable, you know. Is he going to do that every week? No. Are you going to be able to start him every week? No. You run massive inherent risk trying to strike gold like that, and that's what makes it some of the most fun kind of managerial role for a player in fantasy football is managing Taysom Hill. I really don't have a problem with him being, you know, getting quarterback points in a tight end slot. I will say this, however, back when he did get starts for New Orleans, I did pick him up from free agency in our league. I did start him as a tight end, and I did lose. So it's not like it's a cheat code. You're not going to automatically win your week. You can still lose, and if you do lose, you deserve to get made fun of. So you're running a lot of risks here, talking about Taysom Hill. And while he can be frustrating for people to try to deal with, ultimately I think that his days are very much over, that he's going to be the talk of debates like this. But it very well could be, as you alluded to, James, other players can fill this role too, the Swiss Army role. And I think absolutely full steam ahead, each of them should be allowed to do that. All the points that they score should be reflected in the fantasy football matchup.
Absolutely. We did not disagree that much throughout this entire thing.
That's the beauty of it, because now everyone can go to our socials on X, on Instagram, leave comments, talk with us, argue with us, call us dumb. Please don't be too harsh, because I am very sensitive. But, you know, talk to us on there. If you disagree with us, absolutely let us know. That'll be a good time for everyone.
Sound off in the comments, chat. But let's go ahead and get to the end of this episode here. Stu, my friend, what are you drinking this evening?
More Lagunitas. This is the IPA again. I think I drank this in our first episode, but got more of the same. I'm starting to run out of it, though, which is nice. I'll be able to go to the store and pick up some more sometime soon.
Very nice. I, over here, am drinking the Kluber West Coast IPA from Sturdy Shelter Brewing in Batavia, Illinois. I drank one of their beers, I also think, on our first episode of the new season. This one, a 7% ABV IPA. It's delicious and refreshing and all that jazz. And I promise, eventually, I will make use of the Cicerone school I'm in and talk a little bit more about beer itself. But for now, Stu, let's crack these thingies in 3, 2, 1. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It'll go great with the rum and coke.
Ah, so delightful. And as you all at home are cracking your beers and getting ready to drink along with us, for Dr. Michael Stewart, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.